Challenging inequality is the theme of that national conference from ACOS, the peak body for the community and social welfare sector. At the forefront of that challenge is every parent of a child with a disability. And that's the focus of the book called When Horse Became Sore, A Family's Journey Through Autism. Autism is a disorder with no known cause or cure. And this story is one of thousands faced by Australian families who struggle to get the best treatment possible in a nation where disability services are still found wanting. Anthony McCriss is the author, and he's also the parent of 9-year-old Alex. Anthony, good morning. Welcome to Breakfast.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Anthony, your story is the story of any parent and carer who feels abandoned by the nation. Is that how you feel, abandoned?
To some degree, yes, but particularly in the beginning. Things have got better now, but in the beginning, at the time of diagnosis, abandonment's a good word.
How long? Tell me about Alex. He's your son, and he's 9 now, is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
Tell us about Alex and when you first started to notice his decline, the autism, the onset of autism.
Yeah, Alex developed autism around the age of 18 months. There are two types of onset. The first one is where the child sort of simply never develops. The mother might notice their baby doesn't have eye contact, isn't really relating to them, and so on. Alex went through the second type, which is an autistic regression. He developed very, very well up until about the age of 18 months. He was talking. In fact, he was above his milestones. But then slowly, slowly, around 18 months, all the symptoms of autism set in. And that makes it even more shocking for a parent to have a child who was apparently normal and then to see them go through this really quite spectacular crash, in Alex's case, to where he was a child who didn't know the world he was in, was often terrified of the world, and was really a child living in fear.
Must come as such a shock. It must be almost incomprehensible. It's where you get the title for the book, I gather.
Yeah, correct. What happened was Alex's language started to reverse and scramble. And one day we were going for a walk. He usually went up to this particular letterbox with a horse on it, and he would always say horse. And one day he went, sore. And that was kind of a turning point for us, where we thought other slightly strange things had started happening. But that was a part we really remembered, that something was wrong.
You did get, eventually, the diagnosis of autism. I think he was about 18 months old. It was severe diagnosis that you got for Alex. And you expected, I think, I gather, an army of experts to descend on your family and help you. After all, in this country we live in, we have developed health services. But that wasn't what you got.
Oh, yes, I was so naive. I had this idea that, yes, exactly that, that we'd have the best specialists in the world and they'd be running to my son's aid and they'd realise the shock we were going through and kind of everything, the best it could be, it would kind of be okay. The exact opposite is what occurred.
What did happen? How quickly did you get help?
We did get help, sort of, but the help was fragmented. It took a long time to come, if it was going to come. The speech pathology list was 9 months long. That was particularly unacceptable. Kids with autism have a window period between the ages of around 2 to 6, and it's called the early intervention period. And you can get great gains during that period. You can get great gains throughout the whole time, we've found. But that particular window period is really important. The government acknowledged this, so we were getting these conflicting signals. On the one hand, the government was telling us early intervention is critical, as intensive as you can make it. On the other hand, we were being offered therapy that amounted to about 2 hours a week. The rest we would have to do ourselves as parents, with virtually no guidance.
And it's a story, you know, it's your story, it's all the story of many, many other parents who are struggling with children with autism. We've spoken to some on this program before with the same experience as you. They know they have to get intense help, but they can't get it government funded. So like you, they go private. You did go private. You found a therapy called ABA. Is it easy to go private? Are the services out there, Anthony?
There were providers at the time. And they continue to develop, and that whole sector is maturing, and that's great to see. The problem with ABA is the cost, and the cost is extremely high. in the early mid-2000s when we were doing it, a program cost anywhere between $30,000 to $60,000 a year. And this is from the age of your child at two. And we're talking about maintaining that over a four-year period for a proper early intervention program. So those are significant costs.
That's a lot of money. I mean, you've obviously, I think I read in that you've spent around $200,000 already.
To date, yep.
Obviously, I don't know your circumstances, but you had the means to do that. For those who don't have the means, are they stuck at this 2 hours government funding a week?
At the moment, I'm not sure of the scenario. I do know things have improved a lot. When the Rudd government came into power, they more or less immediately put in a package of $12,000 for over 2 years for children up to six, to the end of till their seventh birthday. Don't quote me on that. Something like that. So that was definitely a terrific step, and that really gives a signal to parents that, you know, your struggle is important and your desire to give appropriate therapy to your child is important. But for kids who are in great need, and many kids who are, let's say, low to mid on the spectrum, who have that degree of need, that is nowhere near enough money.
I know that one of your big fears and one of the things that haunts you, you know, this is a terribly stressful, traumatic process, and I read your wife, Kathy, saying, you know, she didn't sleep, she thinks, for almost a year, maybe 2 years after that you first got the diagnosis. And then, of course, you can't sleep because Alex is so unwell. But one of your big fears is what happens to Alex later in life when you're not around. You know, he's left to the mercy of the state, if this is any reflection of how the state cares for people.
I think one of the greatest worries for all parents of a child with a severe disability, no matter what the nature of it, is what will happen to them after we're gone. You notice older parents, or once you're in this world, you can't go for a walk in a park. At some point you will come across an older parent, maybe 60, maybe 70, with a disabled adult child. And that always worries me. I think, well, what sort of life are they leading now? And they're coming to the end of their life. What will happen to their child? What is the future for that child? We spend so much of our lives making sure our kids are loved and cared for. What will happen to them after that? Who will give them that happy life? And that's a constant worry for all parents in my situation.
And I suppose even as you spend all this money to try and make Alex as well as he can be now, it means it won't be there later, which is, I suppose, where this notion of some kind of national disability insurance scheme comes in. It's a debate the country's having at the moment. The Productivity Commission released a draft report just last month. A national disability insurance scheme, what would that do for you, for Alex, for your state of mind, for yours and Kathy's state of mind?
One that actually meant something would certainly help me sleep at night at the moment. It would allay some of my fears. Something on that scale, where we're talking about billions of dollars of funding to a system that will work a lot better, definitely gives me hope, and it will be wonderful to see something like that up and running where it worked effectively.
Assistant Treasurer Bill Shorten, who's taken a big interest in trying to get the Disability Insurance Scheme project up, said that the describes disability as the last frontier for human rights in this country. What do you want that to mean in practical terms?
In practical terms, I'd like that to mean that when I've gone, my son, I can be hopeful that my son will have a happy and rewarding life from cradle to grave, and that he's given that happy and rewarding life without having to beg for it, without having to be constantly worried that its quality is going to go up and down, that it's going to be at the mercy of all kinds of, you know, political cycles and etc., that there's going to be some basic addressing of his needs his whole life long.
And Anthony, Alex is nine now. How is he?
Alex is great. He does very well in the therapy. He's a really happy boy. He goes swimming. He goes skating. He loves his scooter. He's been given some means to communicate, so that's made him a much, much happier person. And it would be great to see therapies like ABA and other therapies too that are appropriate to the children fully supported, so other kids can be as happy as he is.
Anthony, thanks very much for joining us and telling us your story.
Okay, thanks very much.
Anthony McCreese is the author of a book. It's called When Horse Became Sore, A Family's Journey Through Autism. It's published now through Penguin Books. And a big pitch there, I think, a very persuasive pitch for us to pursue this notion of a national disability insurance scheme. It's 8 minutes to 7.